Welcome to KPFK 90.7 FM, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Tammy Banglu, and I'm here with my co-host, Manuel Criollo. This is Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour. Our focus today will be on Korea, the peninsula, and unification. We'll have Dr. Nam-hee Lee, professor of Korean modern history at UCLA. She'll discuss the recent elections in South Korea, the role of the rising Uri Party, its implications on the impeachment of President Moo Young-ro and the Korean sovereignty, followed up with Dr. Sung-hae Suh, co-founder of Notodol for Korean Development in NYC. She'll take on recent Cheney's recent trip to Asia and U.S. aggression towards North Korea. We'll close up the hour with Phyllis Kim, president of One Korea LA Forum, who will talk about her work on unification here in the peninsula and in Los Angeles. So we'll be right back. So I'm right back. This is Tammy Banglu. I'm here with my co-host, Manuel Criollo. With us online today is Professor Nam-hee Lee. She's the Assistant Professor of Korean Modern History in the Department of East Asian Studies, Languages, and Cultures at UCLA. Nam-hee, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, hi. Welcome to the show. As we know, some of you may know that March 2nd, South Korea's President Moo Young-ro was impeached by the Grand Nationalist Party and his own Democratic Millennium Party. And so right now the constitutional courts in South Korea have about 180 days to figure out whether or not they're going to uphold the impeachment or whether they're going to put President Roh back on back in charge. And as we know that the voters in South Korea overwhelmingly supported Roh's Uri Party. So it became the largest party, pushing back against the conservative Grand Nationalist Party. And the Uri Party is a liberal party. But we also know that, for many of you who haven't heard, that the Democratic Labor Party, which is a progressive party calling for South Koreans out of Iraq, also won seats. So Nam-hee, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about the meaning of these new elections, the significance it has on the society in terms of unification, self-determination, and what are the people's sentiment there?
Well, let me just briefly outline what these elections are about for the listeners who may not necessarily be familiar with the South Korean political scene.
Sure. And Nam-hee, can we just have you speak a little bit louder?
Sure, sure. There are four kinds of elections in South Korea, presidential, parliamentary, and two sets of local elections, one for local government chiefs and the other for local assembly members. And as you know, a presidential election is held every 5 years, and a president cannot run for a second term. And other elections are held once every 4 years. And the last Thursday's election, the National Assembly, was the 17th, where the members and local government officials who are elected into office. Now, there were four major parties involved in this election. And as you mentioned, our Open Party, or Uri Party, has won 152 out of 299 seats, becoming a majority ruling party in 16 years. That means for the first time in 16 years, a ruling party has a majority in the parliament. And until now, the Korean parliament has what has been called as weak ruling party and strong opposition party. Mm-hmm. As the main opposition, Grand National Party was the majority with 137 lawmakers. So what this election results reflect, as far as I'm concerned, is that there is a growing public distrust and deep disenchantment with the corrupt and inefficient political establishment. And so basically the election can be summarized as judgment on the part of the public on the impeachment and, again, on the part of the public protecting South Korea's democracy and, to a certain degree, resistance to the region-based party system. And I need to explain this to you in more detail later. And this becomes clearer if you look at the composition of the members of the 17th National Assembly. First of all, 63% of its 299 members are making their debut, the largest number of new faces since 1988, and 250 members are younger than 50, and more than 20 are former student activists who led pro-democracy movement in the 1980s, and the civic activists account for 14.8% of the new parliament. Although the Uri Party, as you mentioned, achieved a resounding victory and became the majority political bloc, this does not mean, as I said before, that the public supported for the Uri Party unconditionally, but rather that this election is a judgment on the public, on the conservative force who led the impeachment, and is an expression of the public for the aspiration for political reform. And what I wanted to emphasize is that this election was to remove the institutional stumbling block for reform. That is what I referred earlier as the weak ruling party and big opposition party system has been dismantled by giving the ruling party the majority voice in the parliament. And it has practically brought down the political system that has been organized along the regional boundaries. Again, the point that needs to be emphasized is that the success of the Nongwuyeon's party does not necessarily mean that Nongwuyeon government's problems have not gone away. That is, their lack of leadership, their questionable capacity for management, and the disappearance of democratic reform. Another thing that is really significant and historic about this election and which has multifaceted implications for the future of South Korean society is, as you mentioned, for the first time in history, the Democratic Labor Party, the DLP, has won seats in the National Assembly, becoming the third largest party there. And you have to remember that DLP is the party that makes workers and farmers and generally the marginalized in the South Korean society as its support base. And the fact that it has entered the political establishment, I think, needs to be put in historical context. And that is that the working class in South Korea from 1945 has had to contest the ideological foundation of the country's state building, that is the anti-communism and capitalist development. The Republic of Korea, that is South Korea, in 1948 was established only after a strong militant labor union was completely rooted out by right-wing groups supported by the American military government. Very few Americans realized that South Korea was ruled by the American military government for the period of 3 years, from 1945 to 1948, and this was after Korea was liberated from 36 years of colonial rule from Japan, and the U.S. decided to divide the peninsula into half as a military decision, that is to expedite the surrender of Japanese troops. The Korea was divided into half in 1945, and as a result, there was a civil war taking place from 1950 to 1953, in which close to 3 million people died. So the language of the progressive activities and even moderate trade unionism as communist agitation and therefore politically suspicious started from 1950s. And so, for example, the presidential candidate of South Korea's first left-leaning political party in 1956, for example, was branded as a communist after challenging then the President Sun Myung-hee in a presidential election the same year and was executed 3 years later. And a military coup in 1961 by former President Park Chung-hee sent all progressive groups underground. So given this context, and given that until now there was no progressive political party to speak of, let alone a party that represents the interests of working class, it is really significant. And given that as recent as in presidential election of 1987, voters rejected the candidate of progressive parties, and in 1992 parliamentary elections, the People's Party, which was a coalition of all progressive forces, was disbanded after it failed to field even one successful candidate.
So you're basically helping us a balance of forces in Korea and Korean politics. But you know, this is really good. Before we go in and talking about the Democratic Labor Party and some of the implications that they may have with the Uri Party, why don't you back up a little? Because what you are basically elaborating is that the Grand Nationalist Party is a very conservative party that brought in sole support for U.S. Policy of Russ stance towards North Korea, the DPRK, very conservative forces. So Uri Party is actually talking about some sovereignty on the Korean Peninsula, but what you're saying is that they're not pushing in terms of calling for unification or even calling for an end to privatization. So why don't we back up and let's talk a little bit about why was President Roh impeached? And who impeached him, and what does this election actually mean for him?
Who were responsible for the impeachment? To that question, the answer would be the main opposition Grand National Party is responsible, and the second opposition party, that is the Millennium Democratic Party. Now, the Millennium Democratic Party was founded by former President Kim Dae-jung, who backed Noh Moo-hyun before it split last September, when more progressive lawmakers loyal to Noh Moo-hyun left to form the Uri Party. Now, you have to remember the Millennium Democratic Party's support base is in the relatively poor area in southwest called Jeollado provinces, while the conservative GNP, that is the Grand National Party, is based in the industrialized and right-of-center southeast, known as Gyeongsangdo area. And the reasons for impeachment given by these two opposition parties was that Noh Moo-hyun violated the election law, and that he mismanaged the economy, and that his aides were corrupt. And the charge of violating the election laws was based on the president publicly appealing for support for the Uri Party in the election. Now, the interesting thing is the National Election Commission ruled that the infraction was not serious enough to warrant criminal punishment, but the opposition parties pushed through the impeachment anyway. But obviously, we all know that motion has backfired, as close to 70% of the public opposed the impeachment and was furious over what it believed were unjust and trivial charges and what it believed to be irresponsible and opportunistic acts of the politicians. And as we know, the candlelight rallies were immediately organized, drawing as many as 130,000 protesters in one day, as was the case, for example, on March 27th. Now, what I think is fundamental reason for impeachment is that the support base of the Conservative Party of GNP has always been the industrialized area of Southeast, which has produced many of South Korea's political and industrial elites since 1945. GNP's political leadership is nothing but elitist, as shown in the case of Choi Byung-ryul, who led the impeachment initiative. His background include a tenure as a journalist in conservative newspaper, mayor of Seoul, and various positions as a high-ranking government officials in the previous regimes. And as for the leaders of the MDP, the Millennium Democratic Party, who also joined in the impeachment drive, although they supported and some were even active in the democratization movement in the 1970s and 80s during the military dictatorship, they were by and large viewed with suspicion as political opportunists. After the demise of the military dictatorship, they enjoyed new privileges under the civilian governments of Kim Il-sung and Kim Dae-jung. And most of them had graduated from elite universities in South Korea, whereas Noh Moo-hyun's education stopped at high school, and his resume only boasts of being a human rights lawyer and former Minister of Maritime Affairs and Fisheries before he came to be the President of South Korea, it is not too difficult to guess that these leaders of the opposition movement or opposition parties were increasingly threatened by a rise of new force, a political force represented by a figure such as Nomuyan. And as the conservative GNP failed to obtain presidency in the last presidential election, it was viewed not as simply a failure in the political sense, but also something more fundamental change was needed. That is, after Nomuyan came into power, the public prosecutor's office conducted investigation into illegal political funds, and the investigation exposed how rampant and how serious the corruption was. And this was, I believe, an unforgivable act as far as the GNP was concerned. And as far as the second opposition party, the NDP, is concerned, it had enjoyed the position of being a ruling party when Nomuyan was in it. But when Nomuyan pulled himself out of it, it was reduced to a second opposition party. I don't think they actually anticipated the passage of the impeachment motion, but they wanted to block the efforts of Nomuyan and Uri Party from gaining more influence.
Hmm.
Now, you have to remember that after voting for the impeachment, the NDP was ridden by factional infighting, and it's now struggling to survive. For example, the formerly 62 lawmaker party has diminished to be a tiny force of only 9 legislators, and there's a rumor that around 5 NDP lawmakers are now seeking to make a move to the ruling Uri Party, ending the 50-year-long history of the once ruling camp, which produced ex-President Kim Dae-jung in 1998.
Hmm. So, Nami, what, given all this, what direction is Korea headed to, and what is the Uri's party position regarding U.S., and we understand that they're still in support of non-combat troops in Iraq. So that actually was a huge campaign platform for the Democratic Labor
yes.
Party, which said all South Korean soldiers out of Iraq.
Yes,
and
yes.
Could you touch on that a
sure,
bit
sure.
and then start naming some of the differences between the Uri
sure.
Party and the Democratic Labor Party and what that means in terms of Korea and then
uh-huh.
also in U.S., I mean, their fight uh-huh. for self-determination and the role of the U.S.?
Now, Uri Party officially supported South Korea's military alliance with the United States and the dispatch of the extra troops to the Iraq throughout its election campaign. But many of its younger members have been calling for a broader independence from American influence and have hinted at reconsidering their support for the U.S.-led war in Iraq, mainly in the issue of the troop commitment. At the moment, I think we have to understand that dispatching troops to Iraq constitutes a core area of United States and South Korea relations, in addition to South Korea and North Korea issues. As you mentioned, Democratic Labor Party sees dispatching the troops to Iraq as an impingement of national sovereignty, and the Bush's request for troops as yet another expression of American unilateralism, and sees the war in Iraq as immoral, and that, again, the DLP sees that such a request amounts to Washington's admission of the failure of its preemptive strategy in Iraq. And, of course, the DLP feels that the sending of combat troops would only worsen the situation in Iraq and arouse the resistance of the Iraqi people. And it has, in alliance with the 351 civic and social organizations, launched last September People's Action Against the Dispatching of Troops to Iraq. So as shown in these examples, DLP is clearly for the national sovereignty. This is not to say that Uri Party is not. However, the Uri Party, although many of its members may be progressive and to a certain degree considered radical, it has many of constraints in the sense that that it feels that it has to appease the conservative element in South Korean society, and that in a strange logic, it has to protect South Korea's the sovereignty by going along with the U.S. This point may be difficult to understand, but Uri Party has consistently, at least Korea's military alliance, and it's clear the Democratic Labor Party is openly calling for revisiting this issue and openly actually calling for withdrawal of Iraqi troops.
And is it a mass issue inside Korea?
Yes.
So the Korean people, are they asking for a withdrawal of South Korean troops out of Iraq?
More than half of the Korean public is against sending troops to Iraq. And the Nomuyon government initially had promised to put this matter as a national referendum, and it has failed to do so. And it unilaterally passed the vote to send the troops to Iraq, and I think that has sent a clear message to the public. So again, I think this relates to what I said earlier, that this is the outcome of the vote. It's not necessarily supporting Nomuyon Party or the Uri Party, and that the fact that the conservative party, that is the GNP party, was able to gain 121 votes speaks to the existence of the still pervasive regionalism, which we shouldn't discount. I mean, the regionalism meaning that the people in certain areas would support their own political leaders, and that certain political parties has been formed along the regional boundaries.
Well, as we know, any movement towards sovereignty mm-hmm. right now, given the international arena, is a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hi, Professor Lee. This
yes.
is Manuel Criollo. I'm
yes.
the other co-host. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara County. Professor Lee, I mean, I think for us, you know, the reason why we thought this issue was very important because the victory of the Uri Party to us at Strategy Center and, you know, for folks out there in the world to be listening is that the important thing that we think is important about, I just came back from El Salvador where there was a presidential election between the FMLN, which is, you know, I guess it would be considered close to the Democratic Labor Party, let's say. It's a left party that, you know, came out of the Civil War, and where we saw the direct role of the United States, you know, where they were basically asking for some form of sovereignty for their own nation. And obviously the right in El Salvador and the U.S. government had a big role in a defeat. And I think for us, we see this as a very important move in South Korea, where we do see, as you're saying, it's not necessarily a support for the Uri Party,
yes.
but it's a support for some form of sovereignty from
yes.
the United States, given that the United States is posturing itself right now as a sole superpower and can sort of ramble through us. Can you give us an, I know that there's been throughout the last two decades a very strong movement for the struggle of sovereignty. Can you give us a picture of what that looks like in South Korea? Because obviously it seems that this election and the elections from I believe 2 years ago are the outcome of this kind of rising movement
yes.
to fight for sovereignty.
Yes. And I think at the moment, I think Democratic Liberal Party is the only party that can articulate the aspiration for the national sovereignty of the Korean people by opposing, again, the global speculative capitalists and the U.S. military hegemony and try to promote mutual respect, equality, and independence in international relations, and that it takes care to come up with a viable and constructive policy based on that principle. This is, again, not to say that individual members of the Uri Party is not for those things that I mentioned earlier, but then it has not been able to articulate at the level of political party or at the level of political policy. But as you said, I think there's a great hope that as more younger and more progressive elements within the Uri Party begins to coalesce, that they are able to articulate and to be able to elevate their aspirations to the level of political policy. It is important that DLP is against the neoliberalism, which until now the Uri Party has not necessarily opposed, and the DLP sees neoliberalism's core element as irresponsible reduction of the state role without necessarily providing or establishing basic social welfare system or without first providing basic labor rights. And so the principle of labor market flexibility, the DFP sees it as only supporting the few and ignores the livelihood of the majority of the people. And so I think that the Democratic Labor Party and many of the civic and social organizations that are working with the Democratic Party, I think is a great hope for South Korea.
That was great, Nami. We're running short of time.
All right.
So this, you know, we want to close off. Actually, just one last question. You were talking about the private on privatization.
Uh-huh.
We know that a Korean farmer stabbed himself to death to protest the WTO rounds in Cancun, Lee Kyung-hae. What was the response of that in terms of the Uri Party was in power, Ro was in power during this? Did it actually shift the issue of privatization and neoliberalism, what's been going on in the peninsula on a mass level there? What was the response from the Korean people after his death?
After his death, I don't think there has been any kind of response in terms of policy change, but I think it certainly did help to activate the social movement. We had a speaker from South Korea who recently gave a talk on this particular issue and that how it helped to galvanize the existing social movements to, again, articulate the concerns. And I think as tragic as his death is, in the context of South Korea, you know, that kind of tragedy helps to, again, galvanize the public sentiment against the neoliberalist policy that had been put forth by the Nguyen government and the conservative opposition party.
Thank you so much.
Thank
that
you.
Was Nam-hee Lee, professor of Korean modern history at UCLA. We'll be right back with Sung-hae Suh to take on...